Connecticut to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Good morning. Welcome to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Happy Wednesday morning to you. Thank you for being with us. We do appreciate it. You want to be in touch with me, your show host? Let's do it on the text line, 251-343-0106. It's pretty that easy. You text me, and I do my best to respond to whatever it is that might be on your mind. Coming up on the program, Scott Buttram will make time for us. He filled in last week. Very appreciative of that. He's from the Trussell Tribune. And we're kind of talking about what's going on in general in politics, but particularly with the elections last night. More on that in a moment. You want to stick around for that. Also, Joey Clark, our Wednesday regular, he's right there, kind of in the middle of the CD2 race. That one's interesting, and we'll get into that in just a moment. And finally, Andrew Sorrell, the state auditor, but also he's kind of spearheading the push to make primaries closed. What do we think yesterday, if there were closed primaries, what it would have done to turnout? Because I don't, you know, maybe a percentage or two lower at worst. But isn't that the knock that, okay, you close the primaries and you're going to keep more people from voting? And I don't know it would have made that a tangible, sizable enough of a difference. But we could talk about that with Andrew in the 11 o'clock hour. Once again, text line 251-343-0106. Just hit me up there and I'll do my best to respond to whatever it is that's on your mind. First, we'll start with Alabama. The special elections yesterday, nothing really surprising in the first. Jerry Carl, there was some enthusiasm for Austin Sidwell, but it was a blowout. It didn't even matter. It was a low turnout event. Maybe I need to look at it precinct by precinct. That would be interesting. But otherwise, Jerry Carl just always underestimated. And without that one loss to Barry Moore, beyond that, he's had a pretty good go at it. The one we talked about at length yesterday was the Rhett Marcus, Hampton Harris, Dave Matthews, AL2 showdown. I think Marcus did just what he had to do. He got to 50% plus one. If this were under normal circumstances and he were on the ballot in a regular Republican primary, he would have missed a runoff by 8 votes. It would have been that close. And, you know, that's a little weak for me with the Trump endorsement. With copious amounts of cash to spend, but it met the threshold just barely. He got to 50% plus one, and it wouldn't have mattered. If he'd gotten to 23, he still would have been the nominee. The only reason it matters, you're kind of looking at this, trying to gauge it, trying to understand it, is there an opening for Shamari Figures? Now, the AL.coms of the world seem to think so. They're probably going to look at this race between Representative Marcus and Congressman Figures as more winnable than Doug Jones and Tommy Tuberville. And there's a lot of oppo. You heard some of it yesterday from Dick Brubaker about Rhett Marcus. Essentially, he's got some tax liens. They're at least from the documents I've seen. And he's voting to increase taxes. That's also documented. you get somebody with a little bit of money and put that in an ad, and it's a little problematic. But look, it's a Republican state. It's a Republican. It has been a Republican district since 2008. But a lot of things sort of fall into place. And this is what we were talking about with Will Hampson yesterday as well. National Republicans are going to have to spend a little bit on this race. I haven't been overwhelmed or impressed with that. It's just a typical boilerplate anti-Democrat party stuff they're running, girls and guys sports and or guys and girls sports and culture issues and immigration. But I think Representative Marcus is a vulnerable candidate. I think he's still a favorite. But I said, I thought going into this that he needed to do a little bit better than a plurality. Now, it was a 28-point win. That's a big deal. But he was also running against guys who really weren't up on air. Just didn't have the budget, didn't have all the people. The smart people are working for Rhett Marcus. A lot of Katie Britt world. And I anticipate figures will have a lot of media cover. I mean, how many J.D. Crow cartoons how many votes does J.D. Crow cartoon carry? I don't know. Not much these days, but there's something there. And, does Shamari Figures raise some money? Perhaps. So it's still AL2. That's the most competitive election we'll have on the ballot. I think way more competitive than Doug Jones and Tommy Tuberville in November. The others went as expected as well. Gary Palmer won his seat by, I think, a bigger margin than he had won it on May 19th, 87-13 against Case Dixon. And Amy Akin, 73-27 over Perry. She is the Republican nominee in AL7. I don't think that's competitive yet, but here's why it's important. She runs right now. She gets out, goes to all the events, starts building an infrastructure. Then when they finally do decide to change the lines and move the lines to a more favorable Republican AL7, then she could be the front runner. So that was last night in state. The other thing that was some of these other states that was intriguing, I think that the Darling Graham Nordone, Ralph Norman's in a good place today in South Carolina. He was 8 points behind Graham. But remember, this was a crowded field. So South Carolina, you're going to have a runoff between Darling Graham and Ralph Norman. Ralph Norman's a Tea Party, or not Tea Party, but Freedom Caucus guy. Obviously, Darling Graham is the sister of the late Lindsey Graham. And she hasn't really defined herself, but she's got the Trump endorsement. That's important. She'll raise a lot of money. She is the NRSC pick. She is the establishment pick. But 32.7% with all that going for you is kind of a weak thing in South Carolina. And Norman, if he can shore up the support from the Russell Fry voters and Mark Samford, who was in this race for whatever reason. It was a very crowded field. What we had, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 candidates running for that U.S. Senate seat. Graham won a plurality, 32.7%, but it's going to go to a runoff between Norman and Graham. And, it'll be a quick turnaround here. I don't know when the runoff is. August 25th. So they got 2 weeks. That's one to watch. Wisconsin, the crazy Francesca Hong versus David Crawley. This was the DSA versus the establishment. Crawley ekes out a 4,000 vote victory in that primary. The Democrat Socialist candidate lost, probably would have been preferred for Republicans. Tom Tiffany, the U.S. congressman running in that race, in that Wisconsin gubernatorial race, he won easily. But here's what you need to know. And this gets to this blue wave discussion. So Wisconsin was a blue wall state that Donald Trump won in 24. That was one of the reasons he's president, won the popular vote. But you look at the vote totals in the Democrat primary. Now, they had a competitive primary, nearly 800,000 votes. 800,000 Democrat voters showed up to vote in that election. 490,000, or about half a million in the Republican primary. It wasn't competitive, but 300,000 more voters voted in a Democratic primary than in the Republican primary. That's bad news, guys. That's a warning sign. Outside of Alabama, there's more interest in the Democrat primary than the Republican primary. And in Minnesota was also kind of interesting. Michelle Tafoya, who's maybe you might know her from ESPN, is the Republican nominee. Peggy Flanagan, who's not as she's progressive, but not DSA. She won the Democrat primary, but it gets back to this: 400,000 votes in the Republican primary, nearly 700,000 votes in the Democrat. Minnesota's not a blue wall state, but that's a big, big discrepancy. That's a state that sometimes Republicans flirt with. And then finally, in Connecticut, of all places, you had a longtime incumbent, John Larson, won his first race in 99, lost to Luke Braunin. And I think that was more of the retirement home mentality about Capitol Hill. Larson, been in Congress. He had kind of a Mitch McConnell episode on the floor where he just stopped and they didn't really give a satisfactory reason for why that happened. But a longtime Democrat did go down in Connecticut last night, for what that's worth. 251-343-0106. Let's get a break in here. We'll return. This is the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5.
Open everybody on the radio land. Find the love just as true as mine. Good night, angel. Sleep tight, darling. And close your pretty brown eyes. Look away. Look away, Dixieland. Glory, glory, hallelujah.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday morning, day after elections here in Alabama, but also around the country. 251-343-0106. Billy asks, what do you think about Donald Trump cowering in the food truck, leaving the staff and reporters as a decoy? I think he's just doing what the Secret Service told him to do. it is a little weird, and I understand the angst from the media. So, I mean, it's not like Donald Trump said, hey, I'm going to go cower in the food truck. He was told, hey, Mr. President, come with us. So I don't know, Billy, what you want. I think, you know, after, two assassination attempts and some others that were apparently foiled, he does what he's told. It's just kind of funny, like, the way the media are acting about it. Like I said, it was strange that the media and a couple of cabinet secretaries had to remain on the plane that was supposedly threatened. But, I'm not crazy about that. But I don't think it was like, Mr. President, come with us. What about the staff and the reporters? It was sort of like, okay, yes, I'll go with you. But it's just, what was he supposed to do there? No, I got to save Major Garrett. Or I don't know whoever's in the White House press corps these days. Derek, boomers voting for boomers trying to tell you they are coming. I may not always be right, but I am rarely wrong. Jason, good morning, Jet. Do you think we'll see a Marcus figures debate time soon between now and November? And will Marcus continue his non-aggressive style and make it easy, old figures? I don't think you'll see a debate. Unless there's some polling that shows Rhett down in the polls. And the polling in the state is so corrupted. The media are going to put out a poll that will show it. The samples are wrong. The essentially the problem Rhett Marcus has to overcome, I think a passable, barely passable special primary election win. He got to 50%. That's kind of where I put the needle at. He needed to exceed that. But he is going to be a Wiregrass candidate running against a Montgomery candidate. So there's going to be numbers. And unlike Hampton Harris, Dave Matthews, whoever else was in that race, there's going to be one of the candidates is going to be funded. Shamari figures will have money to spend on campaigns. Look, this is why Democrats will play here. They may not think it's winnable, but they know if they spend a little bit, then the NRCC will come in and spend a lot. And if the NRCC is spending money in Alabama instead of some other battleground state, then it's money well spent. So I think there's some chess, some 3D chess going on here, but they're going to make Republicans earn that congressional seat. You're flipping a seat. They're going to make them work for it. Unnamed texture, pickup truck has stalled in the Bankhead Tunnel eastbound, blocking traffic. Bill, that's from last hour. Derek says debate should be mandatory, but they're not. You can't make people debate. It's just they're not going to. And, a couple of things here. Rarely in our lifetime are elections won and lost in a debate setting. Rarely. Therefore, the media, I don't know. If you got a big lead, there's no reason you add credibility to your opponent with a debate. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. You're still on the line. Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 1065-251-343-0106. Coming up on the show about an hour from now, our friend Joey Clark from News Talk 93.1 in Montgomery. And then in the 11 o'clock hour, State Auditor Andrew Sorrell. So please stay tuned for that. Joining us now on the line, you got to hear him last week. I'm grateful for his fill-in time. But Scott Butcher from the Trestle Tribune is with us. Scott, how are you?
I'm well, Jeff. How are you doing this morning?
I'm okay. Kind of a late night, kind of deciphering everything, but we got through it and everything.
Yeah, some of those were kind of interesting, but pretty predictable, don't you think?
Wisconsin was a little bit of a shock. The polling was so bad there, they had hung up.
Outside Alabama, yes.
Yeah, and, the takeaway for me, too, on the national elections real quick was I think Republicans needed a Democrat socialist candidate to win and to have a shot. Because this is the tell, like, Democrats, you know, far, far outpaced Republicans in their primaries yesterday in Wisconsin and Minnesota. That's, I think that's a sign of things to come. We could talk about, people might be, have angst about, you know, DSA candidates or whatever, but they're not thinking about that. I mean, if they're thinking about anything, it's going to be gas prices. It's that.
And it's that, always that.
It's going to be that. They don't care about all of this. Maybe on the margins, maybe it moves 5% points, but you need like a 10, 15, 20% swing.
Right. And you know, we saw economic news this morning that inflation has really cooled under Trump, both month to month and year to year. So, you know, I think he's made strong strides in the economy in that respect. And that could help in a lot of ways. Prices have cooled. You know, this could be an indicator that we might see interest rates start to go down a little bit, but it hadn't happened yet. And what we haven't seen are gas prices get down to the pre-2020 level. And I contend that's because Trump kind of took his eye off the ball with the Iran stuff. He started focusing on that and less on the economy. But that's what I think voters want to see, is they want to see those gas prices drop. I think everybody's appreciative that inflation has cooled, but it was starting from a pretty high point, right? The pocketbook almost always dictates the outcome of elections, almost always.
I'll tell you this, and it's the same mistake Biden made. Hey, the economy is getting better, stupid. Why don't you see that? But it's just in the eyes of the voters, it's not. And they can try to ramrod a message through. But the metrics don't matter. It's all perception, and that's what wins elections. Right. And you've got to overcome that. So, like, my advice, if they were asking me, and they're not, would be, guys, like, acknowledge your problems here and come up with a plan and talk about a plan. Right. Don't just be dismissive of the gripes. Some of it is media embellishment and exaggeration and hyperbole. But the main point is, like, you gotta show what you're doing. You can't just lean on the big beautiful bill from a year ago.
That's right. The debit card is always going to guide the voter. And when you're talking about gasoline prices, which have remained too high, and when you're talking about grocery prices, while prices have cooled, while inflation has come down and is at a manageable rate, all of that is true. But the consumer is still paying those elevated prices from 2 years ago. And when you're talking about food and gas, Jeff, you and I both know those are the two things that punch every American in the face every single week, and they're inescapable. Had Trump just been able to get the gas prices down, because fuel touches everything, right? Shipping, going back and forth and sort of touches everything. Had he been able to continue that route, I think he started off well in that area, then we would see a decline in some other areas, because if you can lower fuel cost, you can touch a lot of different things. And again, we got distracted with the Iran thing, and now the prices have popped back up. And all of that is due to Iran. I'm not saying we shouldn't have gone into Iran. I don't I don't take that position. But we've got to accept what that decision has done to the psyche of American voters right now.
Yeah, and, you know, I hear this sometimes when I complain about the Iran decision. I don't think that they game planned it out fully. Sure, they may have known the gas prices were going to go up. They may have known all of the turmoil in the region. But they stopped there, and they didn't really consider the domestic political implications. And for that reason, it's like, guys, here's the deal. Like, you lose this election, and all of this stuff about Iran is going to come to an end because Congress is not going, you know, Democrat Congress is not going to back Trump on this.
No, they're going to cut funding to the war, and that's exactly what will happen. If they get control of the House, that's what's going to happen. The biggest tale in that, Jeff, were Trump's comments immediately after the first wave of bombing in Iran. And we all saw it. We all remember. I heard it. And I'm going to be honest, I accepted it because I wanted to accept it and I wanted to believe it, even though common sense told me that is not going to be the case. And that is when Trump went on camera talking about the wave, and somebody asked, when will this be over? And he said, I don't know, maybe 2 weeks, 4 weeks at the most, something along those lines. Here's the problem with a country like Iran. I think we decimated their formal military right off the bat. The stuff they're saying about destroying the Air Force, all of that happened, right? But I don't know that Trump's advisors were in his ear saying, listen, when we eliminate the formal military in Iran, they are going to shift to terrorist guerrilla warfare. And they're going to keep fighting, but they're not going to do it in a formal way. And these people are much harder to root out, and they are much harder to stop. There was no way we were going to be out of there in 4 weeks. There was absolutely no way. He chooses his own advisors. And those advisors clearly did not give him a solid picture of how this would unfold over time. And as a result, what is it, 4 months, 6 months? We're still there.
Well,
we're fighting this guerrilla warfare.
It went from we got to stop them from getting a nuke, to now the objective is completely different. You got to keep the Strait of Hormuz open.
Right.
And that, believe it or not, is a far more difficult thing to do than decimating a nuclear ambitions.
That's right.
So, yes, perhaps we have achieved that objective, but the Iranians, they've decided, well, then we're just going to do this, or we're just going to be a thorn in your side. I don't know what the answer is there, other than digging a canal through, the Arabian Peninsula somewhere, because otherwise it's a lost cause.
It is going to be very difficult to ever get that under control because of the way these terrorists go about their business. That, you know, they hit you and then they move, and they make it very difficult to stop. They don't need a nuclear weapon or ballistic missiles to do what they're doing right now. All they need to do is scare these private shipping companies into putting their multi-million, multi-billion dollar vessels through the strait, and that's what they're doing. If I'm Donald Trump, and I hope he's already done this, I would call my military advisors in, and I would call them on the carpet over this stuff. You know, why did you not lay out exactly what we were going to be dealing with here? He's got to be questioning in his mind why they led him into this, trying to convince him, oh, this will bomb them and end their capabilities, and this will be over in a couple of weeks.
What I think happened is he didn't listen to his military advisors. He listened to his foreign policy advisors.
Well, you may be right.
And, that's a big, Foggy Bottom versus Pentagon has always been friction.
That's right.
But that's the thing. Like, what exactly are we going to do here? But the foreign policy people at the state are saying, you got to do this, you got to do this, you got to do this, you got to do this.
Right.
And we're just not there militarily. There's a lot more that needs to be done. But for now, I mean, the Iranians, you can take off out of their leadership, take out their military. They still have tools in their chest to make it hard for the West.
That's exactly right. And they've got a terrified citizenry that they've seen tens of thousands of their own citizens murdered by this regime. So they're not going to go into the streets again. They were just massacred for doing that. So it's a tough situation. And I also think, as we're kind of getting back to the economy, that it's, again, I don't think the economy is doing as poorly as the media is indicating. I think there are a lot of good signs there. I think Trump has done some good things. But it's important to remember that it was Donald Trump who set the bar in his first term when he got gas prices down to under $3 and in some cases almost pushing $2, and interest rates were down below 3.5%. I mean, he kind of set the standard that he is now trying to chase in his second term. And again, you hit citizens in the face every week with gas prices and grocery prices, even though there has been tremendous improvement in some of those areas, especially the grocery prices. They've kind of frozen. It's not what Americans expected to see. I think we all were anticipating a return to first term Trump numbers, and you can't get there with all of these different things that are dividing your attention, and that's where he is. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out, but I don't think we're anywhere near the end in Iran, and that's going to be a pain in the side.
Yeah, and this, I mean, if the gas prices weren't impacted directly, then none of this would. No one would care about Iran, but this is, you know, people are just going to do what they're going to do. Here in Alabama, the election just nothing really surprising. I think that Marcus, even though he had a 27-point win or whatever, right, I still think it was a weak win. He got 50%. Had this had a runoff component to it, he would have missed a runoff by 8 votes. He would have gotten to 50% plus 1, but he would only have won it by 8 votes.
Yeah.
And the problem with that is it's just like, you know, he's not just a candidate running. He had the Trump endorsement and all the associations in the state backing him. He had
Teddy Britt endorsement.
75% of the Republicans in the legislature endorsed him.
Yeah.
He had a lot of backing in that race. He just, I just don't think he's a great candidate, a good retail politician, at least not yet. Maybe there's something they could do there. But Democrats are going to make him earn it. Shamari figures can walk out this mailbox at $500,000 to run just by virtue of being an incumbent.
That's right.
And I think the Democrats look at it. They say, well, we may not win this race, but we could make the Republicans, the NRCC, spend money in AL2, and they won't have that money to spend in some other battleground state. And that's going to be a net benefit in the long run.
Yeah, I think you just nailed it. That summary is spot on. You know that area a whole lot more than I do, Jeff. So all I can tell you is my outsider view. First of all, the Trump endorsement, I don't think Donald Trump knows this guy from Adam's house cat. I don't think he knows anything about him. I think he just endorsed who his advisors told him to endorse. Katie Britt, on the other hand, I think does know him and that sort of thing. She liked him. She endorsed him. She was very strong in supporting him. But for whatever reason, it did not resonate with the local voters. I saw a couple of clips where David Matthews kind of embarrassed him a little bit. I wouldn't call it a debate, but some of these party meetings where they got to kind of stand and speak side by side. He's not resonating with the voters. And if you want to take that district back, they really needed a slam dunk candidate to get the Republican nomination. I don't get the feeling from last night. I don't want to put too much emphasis on a special election and the numbers that come with that, but I didn't see a lot of indication from the results yesterday that lead me to believe Republican voters are going to charge to the polls for this guy and take that seat away from figures in November. We'll have to wait and see, but this does not look like the slam dunk candidate the GOP really needed in that congressional district to me.
No, and our mutual friend Dick Brubaker was on yesterday, and apparently he's getting the oppo shop to him about Rhett Marcus. he's got a bunch of tax liens, Representative Marcus does, and he voted to raise the gas tax. And his opponents really weren't able to make hay of it. They just didn't have the funding. But, man, if you think about, like, the media.
The Democrats will.
Right. The first of all, figures will have the built-in advantage of AL.com and the TV networks and, you know, whatnot. But also, he's going to, I mean, the figures is going to have money to spend and make a big deal about this and get the airwaves. And, I think that's. That's something they better be prepared for. I'm not. I am not wowed by this campaign that he's run, but I don't think he's going to lose. He's still the favorite, but it's better to be safe than sorry.
And does that race end up generating a little bigger turnout in that part of the state that could also impact and support Doug Jones a little bit more than he may have been supported otherwise? If this is the competitive race that we believe it's going to be, it could have a trickle-down effect. And it's weird to call the governor's race a trickle-down, but in that district it may be. You know, Jones is showing a little closer in the polls, though we, again, were proven yesterday beyond and more nationally than locally. But yesterday we saw evidence that the polls are still a bunch of BS. They're just outright lies in some places. So I don't know that Jones is as close as the polling indicates.
No, I still think Tuberville wins that race by 20 points. One last thing on AL2 is that, you know, you have a Montgomery candidate, and he is from the population center where all the Democrats are.
That's right.
Rhett's from Coffee County. He's from Enterprise. This is not a small, relative to Alabama, it's not a small town, but it is not where the population is. I think he's got that going against him as well. There's a lot of things these guys got to do, and they got to learn from their mistakes. And I just don't think they're there.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't know how short our time is. I do want to mention Amy Akin getting the GOP nomination in 7 against Sewell. And you and I have talked about this. I think this is probably 2 cycles too early for Republicans to make a move there. But she is a good candidate. She's a newcomer. I've known Amy a long time. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out. I do think she will out-campaign Terry Sewell. I don't think that'll be enough to win it.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is setting up for yet later on when they change the line. It's still important to do.
Yeah.
But it may be a little early. Hey, Scott, folks want to find you online. How can they do so?
Well, you can always follow us at TrustfulTribune.com. And you can follow me on X at Scott Buttram. And I welcome new followers anytime.
Scott Buttram, ladies and gentlemen. Scott, we appreciate it.
Thank you, Jeff.
All right, let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. Long before you take this, promise me, son, not to do the things I've done. Walk away from trouble if you can. It won't mean you're weak if you turn the other cheek. I hope you're old enough to understand. Son, you don't have to fight to be a man. Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Wednesday morning. Joy Clark coming up in about 45 minutes. And Andrew Sorrell in the 11 o'clock hour. Squirrel Vereen, let me get this underway here, writes, President Trump stood up and said, fight, fight, fight. Walked across Lafayette Park and more. And more Liberals calling him a cowering for doing the switcheroo with the planes. All presidents do something similar, like getting rushed to a bunker or shell game with the limos, planes, helicopters. Yes. And also I think Clinton did something similar. It's just not to me. We could talk about leaving the others in harm's way. I think that's fair. But I don't think it was Trump's call. I don't think Trump said, well, screw them. Let them get hit with the shoulder-fired missile. Get me to safety. I don't think that's it at all. So, Mr. President, we have some late-breaking news. Come with us. And that's their mandate. But, it's just... it's just fodder for the left, but they're going to do what they're going to do no matter what, no matter what he had done. It's not going to be good enough. So it's a little, it lacks credibility when you consider the source. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. Make a little loving, a little turn of loving on a Mason-Dixon line. Fits my life, oh so right. My Dixie.